Welcome to the Genesis Speaks podcast, the transformative power of women's stories, a platform that empowers women's storytelling to promote collective vulnerability, acceptance, and healing. I am your host, Jennifer Malcolm, self-made entrepreneur, women advocate, and life balance expert. Welcome back to the next episode of Genesis Speaks, the transformative power of women's stories, where every woman has a story and every story matters. I'm Jennifer Malcolm, your host. With me today is my friend, Marianne. Marianne and I met actually out in California about 5 or 6 years ago. We are on a similar journey and our paths uniquely crossed. Marianne Stropke is on a journey that most women will encounter, a walk of widowhood. On her journey, Marianne moved past her grief and loss, discovering hard truths about widowhood and her own hidden strengths. She joins us today to share how she has traveled from what she has lost to what she has gained as she has redefined her life. Welcome, Marianne, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thanks, Jen. It's great to be here with you.
So we're going to dig into, you have a very unique story. You are young, you're beautiful, you are a mom, but you have experienced something at an early age that most women haven't, and that was losing your husband several years ago. And honored that you have the courage to come here and just share a little bit of that journey of walking through that. And as you have continued to walk through that through the years of navigating teenagers and career and family in a really unique way. So you can begin the story however you want.
Thanks, Jen. And it's great to be here. I'll tell you, I'm not sure at different points in this journey of mine, I've been more open and less open to talk about it. It's not linear. I mean, we all hear this. We know this about loss, whether you lose a spouse or you go through a divorce or you lose a child, whatever the specific loss may be, even a job, it's very different for everybody. And I found coming up now in 5 years, it'll be 5 years on September 27th.
Wow.
This is an opportunity, this conversation today, to really maybe put a punctuation mark on what I would consider one of the most important liminal but chapter-like phases of my life. And it's hard to go through, it's hard to relive, but at the same time, I can't think of a better way to honor Eric and honor the dad that he was to my kids.
And it was interesting because as my team prepped your interview last week and, you know, even the questions and the script that we, you know, kind of co-created together, like my team's already in tears. Like you have a very powerful story. And my team was moved from the beginning of just your strength, your fortitude, your loss, your openness to discuss it. And like you're already transforming women on my team. And I can't wait to be able to release this to other women that have had loss of some sort and that grief of loss, unexpected loss, and that there's camaraderie, there's a tribe that comes together. It's not a tribe you want to be a part of, but it's one that, you know, you get put into and you walk that out. So 5 years ago, almost, do you want to talk about that day?
Sure do, because I'll never forget it. That's for darn sure. It was a Sunday, much like the anniversary is this year. And my son and I, who was 15 at the time, we were walking back from church. So the way that our particular church facilitated Sunday school was to have the service before and then Sunday school is right after. Well, he and I came back. My daughter stayed for Sunday school and my husband was out running errands during the time. So just the way our schedule ran and we were just, you know, busy parents, right? Everybody's going a different direction because we're trying to accommodate all of these schedule requirements. So here we are and Kyle and I are walking. We fortunately lived across the street from the church. Walk up the driveway and to picture my driveway, it's probably 150 feet back and walking slowly, we're chit-chatting. And all of a sudden I see, no joke, on my back porch, my husband's feet. I thought, oh my God. And in that moment, I just started running. I broke out into a sprint to the back of the house because I could then start hearing my dog barking. And I thought, uh-oh, And Kyle did not know what was going on at this point. So he kind of follows, but he's not reacting like I'm reacting, because I'm reacting like I'm literally going into an ER or a burning house, right? I've always felt like I've had kind of an outsized cortisol reaction to events, right? Like, I don't know how to act normally, but I'm your gal. If the event something's burning down, send me in. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll do something.
But right? you'll rescue everyone in the burning house.
Right. I guess. So I go to the back and he is face down. And I went into a sequence of unbelievable action. So the door was locked. The key was in the door. So he must have collapsed right there. And I told my son, who is, I've never seen a face like this, completely stricken. I said, Kyle, go get the home phone and dial 911. Now, if we can go back 5 years and remember what it was like, you couldn't use your cell phone reliably yet for GPS purposes. So he goes in, guy says, Mom, 911. I go, yes, the actual 911 talk. Kids don't know this, at least my generation. They don't really get how to even make a phone call, especially on a school phone.
No, you just now touch your name and it magically works.
Right? I mean, it's a really different experience for them, right? I needed the help.
Yeah.
So there, the dog doesn't remarkably run out. The dog stays. And I thought, okay, this is bad. So Kyle gets the EMS on the line, but he can't talk. He stops talking. So I grab the phone and I tell them, just get down here. I'm literally down the street. And I mean, they were like, we're already on the way, Marianne. Right. We're coming. And so he hangs up and I said, Kyle, I just need you to stand back for a second. And I get down on the ground and somehow was able to turn Eric over. Wow. Lips are already blue. And I thought, oh, mother of God, I don't know if this is good.
Right.
I started administering CPR, which, by the way, no matter what training you have, we're terrible at it, right? You lay citizens, I'm thinking, oh my God, do I know how to breathe? When do I do chest compressions? What's the sequencing? Right. But I started doing it because I realized even if I can keep his heart beating and get some air into his passageways, I might have a shot, right? No, all the signals are pointing to. I mean, this guy's not moving.
Wow.
So this is grand total, by the way, of being at church, because I happen to be Catholic, that's a 45-minute endeavor, right? Somewhere in that 45 minutes this happened. It's not like this is an hour-plus situation, right? So I'm sensitive that I'm operating with potentially within a window where I can save. EMS shows up. They rush in. They tell me to get off because this is a tiny back porch.
Yeah.
And they start doing their thing. And I think in this point, one of my neighbors could hear me screaming. I don't have real memory anymore.
Sure.
All of the emotions and both Kyle and I crying. And one of the neighbors ran over and I asked him to go get my daughter because I didn't want dad to be carted. Like I didn't want a scene, even though it was just, I mean, could you create a worse scene?
Right.
But I, in my mind at that moment, I was creating a worse scene if I didn't get my daughter to see her. So they rush over. They must have explained the situation. Don't know. And in the meantime, the EMS person comes up to me and says, hey, I need you to know something. I go, you don't need to tell me. And he said to me, I need you to just get in a car with your kids and you're going to follow us. And we're going to go through a process for you. I said, okay. And we can call it there. I go, you don't need to call it. Take the pressure off yourself. You know, we're close enough to a hospital. And he goes, I appreciate that. So just give us a second. We'll get him in and your kids are going to see life-saving attempts.
Wow. And I'm sure, like I have a 15-year-old, 18-year-old, 19-year-old. I cannot imagine the complexity of seeing my husband on the ground and also trying to be a mom and protecting and navigating and directing and thinking like, I don't want my daughter to come up this driveway when, you know, there's a lot of turmoil going on. So you're like compartmentalizing as you're also trying to save your husband, Eric.
It's unbelievable. Oh. It's like the worst ER episode. Yeah, I'm dating myself now.
I love ER. That's such a great show.
It's such a great show. But the point is, you're trying to imagine how bad is this at the moment, and it is that bad. So once my daughter came, and you know, I could hear her screaming, and it was the daddy, daddy, daddy. So a 13-year-old, so she's my young one, and Mila didn't see, you know, his face. She saw kind of like the paramedics working to get Eric off the porch.
Right.
And at least she saw the moment, and my neighbor, to his credit, said, I'm going to drive you. Yeah. So we're going to go together. My wife can come later, and we'll get you there.
Right.
Other neighbor on the other side happens to be a firefighter, and he got a call from our local dispatcher.
Yeah.
Hey, Terry, there's been something that went wrong at your neighbor's house. We're taking Eric into the hospital. You may want to get there.
Wow.
His wife left their dinner. Showed up.
Wow.
They made it faster than any of the family members. And then we went through the sequence at the hospital, which is something. Everything from, but here are the things you don't know when you go in. You don't know that they're going to ask you to autopsy your spouse because he's too young to just die of natural causes.
Okay.
He was 51 when he died. You don't realize that you're going to see the coroner that you just saw at church have to do the autopsy. And he was literally eyeball to eyeball with you. You don't realize how hard it is to have to tell your mother-in-law that her son died. You don't realize that people have to say goodbye because his wishes were to be cremated, right? And you have to step away from the body. So if you don't give the immediate family the moment, they won't have the moment. So we did all that. And I'm telling you, looking back, you know, I certainly have post-traumatic stress over it. I've had nightmares over it. But nothing was harder than making phone calls. And at some point, you know, a couple of my nearest and dearest friends stepped in and said, you're not doing that. We're doing that.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to make the calls. Thank God.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I mean, listen to me. I'm 5 years out. Yeah. And you know, do you just think, really? Did I do that? And the answer is, yeah, you did.
Wow.
So that was the night. And wow, you know, I had no idea how important that day would be for me, how much it would be. If you could pick a line in the sand or drop a pin, that's how important that day is in our lives.
And I cannot imagine. I have no words to even try to relate. There's just the experience that you have and the loss that you had so unexpectedly. I can't even imagine that type of loss or pain. So thank you for your courage for today. For context for the audience, like, Eric didn't have health problems.
No.
Eric wasn't like, hey, you know, yeah, I might be a little not healthy, red flags, I need to get my life better. Nothing.
No. This was, you know, the first conversations were, you know, is this the widowmaker? You know, the fame dropped dead of a heart attack. You know, it was a confluence of issues that were not anything that they could tell. They couldn't really tell at the end of the day if it was a respiratory or a heart-related event. But, you know, at some point, everything is both. What most people don't realize is when you die, you actually die either of respiratory-related illness or heart-related, because one stops before the other. Right. So if they're inconclusive, and that's a whole nother thing, let me tell you, getting coroner's report, and it's you don't realize what the coming weeks will be. And here's the joke, you know, bodies don't stay at hospitals. Most people don't realize, you know, what happens after the big moment. Well, it's got to go somewhere,
right?
For its next step. And that costs money and it's painful. It's painful in every single way. You're going to start going through a sequence of decisions that are, you know, absolutely unbelievable.
And you're making them in the moment too. Like it's
in the moment.
Yeah, it's not like
how well. No, we planned it. He knew he wanted to be cremated, but we didn't go further. I didn't ask him, hey, do you like the wooden box? You know, right?
Right. You're young. No.
You're, right. And oh, by the way, I mean, how lucky were we? We had life insurance. And we didn't overdo it because, again, when you're young and you put a 30-year term on yourself, so you can figure out when we did this, you're not planning to lose someone. You're planning, if you do lose someone, to cover some critical expenses, and then that's it, right?
Right.
It's unbelievable. And most women, despite the fact that we all go through it, generally speaking, sooner than our male counterparts, we're woefully unprepared, right? So you got to have one dimension of your life at least going your way. Right. Having things pre-planned, doing that kind of stuff is super helpful because the rest of it, let me assure you, is no fun. No. And send down every rabbit hole you can ever, you know, imagine.
No, and I can't imagine, like, on a Sunday morning, you're going to church, and by the end of the day, you're making decisions on autopsies, family,
yes,
you know, funeral arrangements, cremation, all of that. Like, in one day, like, your life is completely different.
That's right.
So how did you shield or not shield your kids through this? I mean, obviously, that's a tremendous loss. I can't imagine, you know, I've been divorced for 11 years now, but I can't imagine even at this age and in my separation from my first husband, that type of loss, you know, at their ages. So how did you, you know, help be their mom as well as dealing with your own grief?
Oh, that's a great question. First and foremost, you know, one thing that we're very practiced at as moms is we put others' needs before ours. It's probably the best antidote to grief. It's not the right one, by the way, but it's the best one. And whether you're divorced or widowed, I think you figure that out pretty quickly. If you put your kids first, it sidelines a lot of other things in your life by necessity. And in a lot of ways, that's good because you can only boil one ocean at a time. I mean, you can't do everything, even though you're going to try. Gosh, how did I shield them? So, you know, here's the truth of it. I probably didn't shield them as much as other moms would have. And I'll give you a few examples. The first thing that I said to them was, this is going to be a chapter in your life. It is not the book. Do not let this be the book.
Wow.
Important chapter. One that's pivotal, watershed moment-like, but certainly do not put it in the camp of, this is my life.
Wow.
People do. And what happens as you get older is your reference point continues to be your history versus, you know, your immediate and then your future.
Right.
And there's no better way to go through that than if you have an opportunity through grief as a younger person. I think you'd be astonished at how many people step forward that lost a mom or a dad that called me and said, I'm happy to talk to your kids because I still think of my dad or my mom every single day. And those stories are really helpful.
Sure.
The other thing I didn't do in shielding them, and you know, maybe this is a little bit of a debate. I went through everything. I put a wake in place, a funeral. We welcomed people to our house through normal grieving processes. I made them buy new clothes for the wake and the funeral and all of the, what I'll call traditions that are really part of most cultures are extraordinarily helpful. Oh my goodness gracious. I had no idea how important they would be. It gave my kids the opportunity to receive hugs, to receive people's grief, particularly of their friends. It opened a level of conversation that children generally don't talk to each other about. But it allows them to say, I'm sorry. Or, do you want to come spend time with me? Or, you know, why don't you come with us on this trip? Maybe this would have been something you would have liked with your dad. And these are short trips. These are not like traveling cross country to do this. But those are so important for kids.
Yeah.
Important for me. But it gives them at tender ages of 15 and 13, a roadmap for how to lean into grief, how to, instead of running, because that's our, everybody's instinct. It's mine. It's yours. It's just saying, I'm going to stop. I'm going to face it for the moment and see what happens. You can always run.
You can always choose to go.
Right? Right. But what you can't do is once you run from it, it's harder to come back into it. Because the fear then is overwhelming. It's bigger than you are. It's bigger than the incident itself.
And I'm sure some even the day trips for your kids or experiences that they had with their friends allow them to still be a kid. Allow them to still experience joy and life and fun, which is, and not that this isn't a transformational event in their life. And I love that you said it's a chapter, not a book, but still through the process of grief, that it is okay to smile. It's okay to have fun. It's okay to grieve through experiences too and learn how to live again. Oh, that's tough.
Great point. And the other critical component is it's only through their normal activities that you as a parent can even understand how they're handling it. So the kids had cross-country meets. They were both runners the Saturday after we had Eric's funeral. So his funeral was on Friday. They both chose to run. And if you watched their individual races, they handled it totally differently. Kyle allowed the grief to fuel his anger. And so he ran powerfully. Mila is the 13-year-old in the middle, glanced out in the audience. I saw the moment. She wasn't looking at me. She swore she saw her dad and choked up, literally started to cry, slowed down. And that was instructive, informative, humbling as a parent. Because it's not a one-size-fits-all, not even in kids, which was helpful for me to realize, oh, wow, I guess I am going to grieve the way I'm going to grieve.
And it goes to the point, and I've talked about this on the podcast previously, you know, I have three kids, so you kind of think like they're going to be the same, have the same DNA, respond the same, and how uniquely different they are. And so even watching them in their grieving process, one fueled by anger to finish, one, you know, unable to finish the race because of, you know, tears and all that, but both are beautiful and appropriate responses to grief and loss, and that they're doing it on their own journey and you allowing them to experience that is powerful.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know how much I allowed it and how much it was just
happening.
You know, I mean, truth be told, you know, a lot of the stuff you don't know because I was in my own fog. Right. I had to do my job as a parent, certainly pay bills, get through it, but I was grieving.
Right.
I'm not sure I was even lucid at that point.
No, and I want to go back. You said this about 5 minutes ago where you were talking about putting your kids first and that it may not be the right thing to do as you're going through loss, through the death of a loved one, divorce, trauma. It may not be the right thing to do, but it's the functional thing to do. If I can focus in on getting my kids off to school, helping them with their homework, doing laundry, it gives us something to do versus just being consumed by our anger or grief. And I remember doing that when I got divorced, that, you know, being a single mom for the first time, and the, this is not what I expected. The loneliness, the anger, the embarrassment, the shame, the, all of that, you know, feelings after a divorce that, you know, you focus in on, well, let me just make a good meal. Let's just play a board game. Let's do something functional, which didn't necessarily serve my healing process, but it was a great way for me to cope through, you know, that pain as well.
I think you said it even better than I did. I mean, that is so accurate. And what you realize is most good therapists will tell you that if you are still functioning, you still don't need traditional therapy. It's really when you stop functioning and you're allowing the emotions, whether it's grief, anger, frustration, the feeling of overwhelm, when that takes over, then you're in trouble. It's the movement, it's the action, it's the progress that allows you to set distance. Everybody will tell you that grief, any kind of grief, gets better with time. It gets better. It doesn't go away. It is with you forever, but you need time. So the best way to put time in between the event and your eventual healing, whatever that looks like, is to have steps, concrete steps, dinner and a board game.
Exactly. So did you jump into grief counseling immediately? What was your steps coming out for you, your kids?
I'm a gal of action. So yeah, of course, you know, the first thing I did was, oh, we're going to go to therapy. And, you know, we're going to follow the Marianne 10-step program of how we're going to... It didn't work, right? The first three sessions, which is what was available, you know, at my employer, which was terrific in support of me and the kids. But, you know, they have a typical employee resource line. And so, you know, most people don't even realize if you access that, if you're employed, you're able to go to three sessions. Generally speaking, it's around there. They set, you know, the number of sessions that are on them, because typically, and very frustratingly so, many, many therapies are out of pocket, right? Because, you know, we still think that this is not real, this mental health.
Health things over here. It's just a woo-woo stuff.
Right. Come to us when you have cancer and you can't go further, but everything pretty much feels like in between is not for you. So when we availed ourselves to that, the therapist said to all of us, you're not ready.
Wow.
If you're continuing to do what you are supposed to do, keep at it.
Wow. And
when you start feeling like you can't, you know, that one shower, which let's pretend like we're not in COVID right now, showering, brushing your teeth, gaming up for life in general, right?
Right.
If there is a slippage in that, only at that point do you engage. Wow. Everybody differently, so I don't want to give a one-size-fits-all because that's not what it is.
Sure.
But for someone like me, here are my steps, you know, that's not going to work. I can't force a therapy process where it's not appropriate yet.
So interesting. So you're saying, like, maintain the path, keep going. And when you see that dip or feel that dip, or you feel something shifting in a negative manner, is for you when, hey, this is the time to go see a therapist.
Yeah. And by the way, you know what it's also really good for? Being humble enough to ask for help, which I'm terrifically bad at. So if you don't really stretch that muscle, how on earth are you ever going to ask somebody, hey, I could really use some company, or I'm having a difficult day, or here's the other thing about being a single mom. Hey, can you help me hang my draperies, or I've got a problem at all the things that we weren't socialized to handle right out of the gate.
Right.
Guess who has to handle?
Right, exactly. And it's interesting, I have a few close friends that are in the process of going through divorce, and you know, it's ugly, and I have such compassion because I've went through it, and mine was not pretty. It was pretty antagonistic, and learned a lot through it. But the things that you don't realize that you, as me, as a single mom, needed help, because at that point, my son was 8, you know, like, getting the heavy Christmas bins out of the attic and bringing them down. Like I was, you know, thank God my dad lives close, but you know, how to do certain things on the car and realize I didn't have medical insurance. So all those things that you navigate for the first time as you're trying to raise kids, I'm sure we're the same with you of like, all right, I need my drapes hung and I need an extra set of, you know, hands or body to help. And sometimes it's the simple things that were most frustrating to me because I felt like I could do it and I realized I couldn't without the help of someone else.
That's right. Whether it's a constraint on your time, which is maybe the most important thing. You know, look, you're a capable gal, Jen. I am too.
Right.
But there is a limit. You're too tired or I haven't washed my hair in 3 days or, you know, whatever the reason is, you have to honor that. That took probably 3 years for me to figure out, holy cow, wait a minute, I can actually call a friend of mine who's been on me, you know, Marianne, what do you need? What do you need? Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Got it.
Well, maybe not so fine.
So how did you transition, or maybe you didn't transition, obviously going from a married couple, having neighbors, friends, you know, colleagues that were, you know, knew of Marianne and Eric, hung out with Marianne and Eric. Did that impact the social life that you had, your friends, or did it kind of just keep going on as normal?
You may have noticed my phone is not ringing off the hook. Yes, it completely impacted it. Oh my God. I think I'm the biggest loser that's going to be on your podcast. Nobody calls me. I mean, a few of my really good friends, and I'll get to them in a second because I've got to honor those gals, those guys, because they're so important to me. But, you know, here's the difficult part. Somebody died. Unlike divorce, which is always, and I did not realize this. I was naive. I thought it would be easy to hang out with divorced friends, but they're treated differently. They're more welcomed because it's immediately assumed that if you're divorced, well, certainly you want to get back together with somebody, right? Regardless of what your journey is, how antagonistic or how painful your divorce was, there's a different bar that people allow for you socially. Mm-hmm. Heaven forbid you're the widow. And oh my God, for my widower friends, even worse. Because you're like, what? I don't know what to say to him. Does he cook? I mean, that's the first part. Yeah. It's unbelievable. So no, you know, in the beginning they would call and people eventually, because they're so used to seeing people in pairs,
right?
We orient our social existence. It's usually not being alone. Right. And my personal growth in accepting myself as a single person has been really something. And I always considered myself really independent and I got this. But boy, you don't got this when you're sitting alone on a Saturday night,
right?
And you think, oh my God, can I do this for the rest of my life?
Right.
And guess what? Apparently in my 5-year journey, you can. You just believe you can. I bet that was not the answer you expected.
No, it wasn't. And I'm going to make sure that I put you on my to call list so I can take it at you.
Thanks. I didn't realize I'm asking for friends.
Okay, we can all use more friends. No,
for sure. But
that piece of, I realized after my divorce, and I know we're talking about different types of loss, but after my divorce, I realized I had never really eaten out in a nice restaurant by myself. I had never gone to the movies by myself. I had never experienced some social things, and I forced myself to do those, and it was so awkward. I was like, everyone's looking at me as like the poor woman sitting over in the corner by myself. And then I realized that there's a lot of people that just go and grab coffee or grab a meal. They're traveling. There's lots of reasons why people eat by themselves, but I felt so isolated and so judged by people who weren't even looking at me probably. But it's those first experiences. And I appreciate that you said that our society is built for couples. That they've, you know, two, you know, plus ones. And there's always that, you know, who are you bringing? And it's like, no, it's just me. Just me.
Right. And then people, the worst part is they don't know what to say to that.
Yeah.
No. Oh, okay. You know, that's usually the best that you get. It's not, we're not there yet. And there's so much great writing on singlehood and really how particularly women have embraced it. You know, it's a shame that we don't spend more time in the okayness of different statuses, because it sure would have helped me. I'll tell you what. And my friends would tell you, oh gosh, we don't judge you for being single. And of course not. I know that they don't. I know that they love me. I know that they care about me, but their wish and their hope for me is da 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 da.
Right.
May not be my wish and hope. Yeah. And they check it because you're operating from frames of references that I don't sit in the same frame anymore. I'm outside of that frame.
Yeah. No, that's powerful. Now, how did you navigate going back to, you know, the weeks after Eric's loss? You know, you're navigating, you're realizing counseling is too soon for you. Did you just jump back into work? I mean, did you have to live life normally again? Like, how did that transpire?
Wow. Yeah, I did. You know, I took the week that he died off. So he died on a Sunday. The funeral was on Friday, and I was back to work the following Monday.
Wow.
Now, that was me.
Wow.
That was my employer.
Yeah.
I had a terrific boss. My colleagues around me were amazing in their support. My teams were amazing. It was me.
Mm.
And remember that action gal that I was talking about? That was the way of I needed to feel normal. And guess what that prepared me for?
COVID.
The struggle that people have is normalcy, right? When I went through my loss, I had no footing. And workplaces and support that is just outside of your community, right? That you're not watching your kids grieve all the time. The look on your mom's face. Oh my God, your mother-in-law who is bereft because she lost a kid, you know, it's a welcome relief. Now, what I will tell you is I spent, because I tracked, the first 2 years of my grieving, crying every commute into work and every commute out. And the commute is an hour long.
Wow.
So I gave myself 2 hours of cry time. And it's not like I even gave myself permission. I just had to.
Sure.
The only release mechanism I had that was my ability to process. I am sure the people along the Cleveland Shoreway were like, why does that woman bawl her eyes out every day, you know? But I was too upset to even notice, and it didn't matter as long as I could drive.
Right.
It allowed me to talk therapy myself, believe it or not. So I could say to myself, I'm okay. I'm okay. Today, I'm okay. I only cried really hard for 10 minutes, which is great considering what the beginning was like.
You're like, good job, Marianne.
Good job. Good job. Yay.
Okay, 10 minutes.
2 years.
Wow.
Years. And, you know, that might not be what it takes for other people, but it took it for me.
And you gave your, I love that you gave yourself permission to do that though, or maybe you didn't give yourself permission, but somehow subconsciously you did, to allow your emotions to flow. My triggers are usually anger and tears. Mm-hmm. And so this past winter, you know, I'm like, I need a healthy outlet when I'm mad and sad and angry. And so Chad went out and got me a punching bag. And so it's like one of those things, like that outlet of moving this energy. And for you, that 2 hours a day of I'm moving this energy, I might swear in this car, I might curse in this car, I might, you know, just sob in this car, but it's your time to feel and move those emotions through your body. And I think most people don't. They will push it down and stifle it. And that movement of energy, grief, loss, anger, sadness, frustration, fear, you know, is a healthy way to, in my opinion, I am not a professional, to, you know, move that energy forward.
Oh, I agree with you. You brought up a couple of things that I want to touch on too. I was an avid runner before Eric died, and I was always of the mind that I needed to pound it out, right? When I was angry, much like you, the best and most effective thing was physical exercise, which thank God that I did. What changed in grieving is you can't run and cry.
Because you can't breathe.
Right? So I know it sounds ridiculous, but I needed to prioritize the crying. And then I downshifted and I did other things. And by the way, I did a stint of boxing myself, certainly walking, all kinds of other exercises. I tried yoga. I'm not a really good yogi. And it's a work in process.
It's a work in process, exactly.
Right. But nevertheless, I mean, the externalization of grief, whether it's through crying or through pounding pavement or pounding a punching bag, is such a healthy and productive outlet. It's way better than day drinking. It's way better than other abuses to your body. Right. And those are options for people, right? Let's remember, we live in a society where we have options, generally speaking, of how to cope. And the real opportunity is to choose the best ones. I had to live for my kids. You know, my goal in all of it was, I've got to put the maximum number of years between their dad's death and my demise as possible. Mm. So if you visualize that, it's a job to stay healthy and not stupid stuff, because I want them to literally push me in a grave. I want them to be like, okay, like, no, the shelf life, we're done here. You know, I mean,
you're good, mom.
Because, right. Instead of having it be a traumatic, awful thing, if I can control it, which of course I can't, but up here, I believe I can.
Absolutely. I think that's powerful and beautiful. And that you have an exit strategy with your kids.
I do.
It's beautiful. And who knows what life will hold? Because we're obviously, you know, from most people that, you know, there's no guarantees in life and loss happens unexpectedly. But when you put your mind and your heart and your intentions and that I'm going to give this big time gap and I'm going to make my kids push me off of this earth versus, you know, suddenly, you know, getting lost. I think it's brilliant.
Thank you. It works for me because it gives me something to focus on. You know, I have a target called I've got to be super old and really, you know, everybody's like, yay, she finally called it. All right. Yeah, it works for me. It injects a little bit of humor. And, you know, the other thing that you learn when you lose someone to death is not scary anymore. Mm. Right? It demystifies dying. And that was extraordinarily helpful. I lost my mom earlier this year. It was actually part of the reason why we didn't see each other at the award thing. She was rapidly declining that evening. And she was gone a week later. Wow. So I know that date and I know when she died. So I say this to you because you're able to be more present when people around you are failing. Right? Once you experience the death of a loved one, at least for me, I was better able to bear witness to other people's loss and grieving. And that is a gift.
Yeah.
I'm a better funeral goer. I'm a better participant in wakes or whatever the tradition is that you may have culturally. I'm a better human being.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, I hope Eric is looking down on me and doesn't strike me with a bolt of lightning, but I hope he says, that's my gal, you know? She's doing it the way it should be done. And that would make me happy.
That's awesome. And that you can pivot and use the loss as a gift to other people and to be more compassionate, more in tune, more intuitive to help someone through their grief process is such an honor. And most people would be like, thank you, but no, I never want to experience that peace. But death is a journey and it's going to come to all of us. And we're all going to experience loss of a loved one at whatever journey in our life. At some point we will. And to have a person there to help you grieve or to really just understand your wants before you can even articulate them, I think is amazing. And Eric would be very proud.
Thanks, Jenny.
You're welcome. So did you change atmospheres, locations, homes, cities, schools, or did you just say, you know what, this happened here, we're going to create life new and different? How did that work for you and your kids?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. So I definitely doubled down on the household for a period of time. So I did a couple of things which are important. I demolished that back porch.
Wow.
It took me a year to get the courage up to do it. In fact, this is going to be a little gross, but I'll share it with you. I didn't have the heart, and my son finally thanked me. And this is where I realized I had to make some changes. You know, when Eric was face down, he drooled a little bit on the back porch.
Sure.
And I left it there because I didn't have the heart to clean it. I don't think my experience is all that unique, but when my teenage son says, oh, thank God you finally wiped that off. Interesting that he didn't have the courage to do it either. So it's a learning process. Yeah. That back porch got demoed, and we hunkered down, and we lived in a beautiful old home for all these years until this year. And I woke up one day after my mom passed, and I realized I have to be done right now caring for other people's needs as it relates to space and take back a little bit of life for me, the way that I need to do it. And sold that house very happily to a wonderful family and moved myself into another city.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, the reason I did that was I didn't want to be the widow anymore.
Yeah.
I wish I were a bigger human than to admit that out loud.
I think it's normal. And I'm sure on that street, that is how people saw you. That's what they experience is, you know, there's Marianne, you know, our neighbor who's the widow versus yeah. new identity that yeah. here's Marianne, a beautiful, hot single mom. So.
Oh my God. Who can we show this to? Let's ask show.
We should like put yeah. on dating sites or something. So.
Right. New. And you know, that's another world. Like you can't even. I made the change for me. I realized early on in that grieving process that I knew my kids were going to be first. So I played that out and I did give myself 5 years. So, you know, here's a spoiler alert. I'm almost at 5 years. Like I got 2 weeks and I said, not time for Marianne, time for kids, time for healing, time for shifting. And then you go on.
Right.
I don't know, but I'll tell you what, I'm looking out my beautiful new windows and I think I like my change of scenery.
Love it.
You know?
It's amazing. Even when we travel, because Chad and I travel quite a bit, when we mm-hmm. travel, I'm like, well, we don't know if we want to go. We go to Charleston, South Carolina. We go to Nashville. We go to places. And how just a change of scenery, new stimulus, different experiences, different food, different smells, different flowers, different sky, because it's so gloomy in Cleveland, sunshine, you know, how much that changes your mood and your heart and your countenance. And so I can't imagine that the beauty of this transition for you of, you know, new beginnings and new opportunities, new views is beautiful.
Absolutely. You know, and it's for women, you know, everybody asks me, oh my gosh, are you gonna get, I lost a dog, our beloved family dog last year. Right. Oh. So, you know, the first question with the brand new house is always, oh my goodness. And of course, if it's, you know, why did you move? The next question is, when are you getting the dog, the cat, the whatever? And I can't say this often enough. Please stop asking me because here's why. I don't want to care for anybody for a while. I want to care for me for a while so that I make sure that all those things I talked about, you know, the, I don't need therapy right now. The, you know, I am processing my emotions by putting my kids first. That has to now stop because they're adults. Can you believe they're 20 and 18?
Crazy.
And it's their time and it's my time, but they're not the same.
It's beautiful. No, it's beautiful. And I saw on Facebook a few weeks ago that you went to Chicago for your daughter's 18th birthday. And it was absolutely beautiful. But it is that. It's a weird, because I have two now in college, college-aged kids, and one's a sophomore in high school. And realizing, like, within 2-3 years, I'll be an empty nester, you know, by name. Now, whether they come back or, you know, do summers here or in school, it's a different thing. But it is a different chapter of life, that they're adults. Yes. They get to make their adult decisions, and I get to be their mentor and their friend, but I don't have to take care of them anymore.
It's awesome. I mean, so I have to share, for anybody that's in Cleveland listening to this, you know, my only emotional moment, because the other question that I get asked frequently is, oh my God, how are you doing with the empty nest? You know, so I uprooted, I moved, I got rid of stuff, and, you know, I did all this baggage unloading, including the children. Bye-bye, you know? And then the Saturday after, I do all of these magical things. So that's like 3+ moves in a summer. And the plus is because, you know, we were back and forth on what we were going to do COVID-wise for my daughter. Right. So here I am. I walk into the grocery store. I love Heinen's. I'm like a Heinen's person. I walk in and I start shopping and I realize, oh my God, there are aisles I'm never going to see again. Now you would think this is like, yay, moment. No, I start to cry.
No.
Yes. Because apparently, maybe this is just projecting, but I am foisting my entire empty nest experience on the poor Heinen staff. Like, I apparently I'm not going to do the same magic voodoo that I did for years. For the first time in 23 years, so that predates my relationship with Eric, I was shopping for me. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, in retrospect, it took a moment.
Isn't it weird though? Like the crazy, like nuances, or you're like, wow, I get to go and I get to buy only the things that I want to need.
Yes.
And no one's making a list. No one's asking me to run their errands. No one's saying, can you pick up an extra gallon of milk or this box of cereal? You're like, what do I want to eat? This is what I'm going to buy. This is what I'm going to cook. And it's good. No, that's it. That's has to be a fabulous, not there yet. Almost there.
You're almost there. And you know, that's one thing I, you know, all women, we all experience all this stuff differently, but that's a good moment. And it's a particularly good moment for, you know, your widower friend here who's saying, I spent 5 years almost to the dot launching, caring, loving, sheltering, guiding children. To now get the reward, whatever that looks like, you know, whether it's they come home at the holidays or not, of having them launch and me being me. Oh my God. Like, what an interesting chapter.
And the self-discovery or the re-self-discovery of who you are. What are your likes now? What are your likes now? Absolutely. I love it.
By the way, I have no idea. So I'm open to suggestions. If there is anybody that can send me a few ideas. That would be great. I need them.
So I have one last real question and then we'll put some closing remarks. But as women, we are likely, statistically, to outlive our partners. Is there something that you learned on your journey that you wished you would have known from the very beginning? And any guidance that can help? Because obviously we're all wired differently. We respond differently. We have different emotions. But is there something that you say, you know, looking back, be like, if I knew that from the beginning, or I can gift this to women at the beginning that you can share?
Yeah, thanks. First is that you are human. I had to learn I was human, that I wasn't superhuman. And that I was allowed to be upset and to grieve, because most times, especially if you want to be a strong woman, you can't. Nobody can see you sweat. I think I grew up watching a commercial saying that to me. I think I believed it.
Right.
You, in fact, can grieve and grieve for the rest of your life. You know, I'm kidding myself if I think that I'm not going to miss Eric. I miss him every day. every day in every way. I just have to look at my kids. It's unbelievable. The second thing I would say is remember your you. And that is a big statement, but let me break it down for what that meant to me. I've told women time and time again, particularly my younger women, please make sure that you stay in the workforce, regardless of how you feel about childcare, if you're lucky enough to have children, or care for aging parents, whatever circumstantially you're facing, to the extent to which you can. The support and the love that I got from colleagues, the self-fulfilling opportunities that work presented, they were absolute game changers, Jen. I couldn't have, for one thing, you can't live without really understanding the implications of not being employed. So if I go back in time, and if I had not had a job at age 43, this picture looks a lot different. It's not relocating into a new house. It's not sending kids to college. That's practical and real. Overall, I would simply say, be yourself. Don't forget yourself. But if you find yourself as the single parent and caring for other people, perhaps a parent, whatever it is, because, you know, middle age is horrible. I enjoy some elements of it, but, you know, I could live without all of the responsibilities because we take them on as weights, literal weights. Make sure that you have your next step always in your mind, because you never know when this happens, whether it's divorce or it's widowhood. Having options is a gift from God, if you believe, right? When you don't have options, you lose hope, you lose continuity, you lose perspective, and that's easily remedied if you give yourself options. So if we can remember that as women and share that with each other, and if there's somebody that you know that experiences widowhood like I did and maybe isn't employed, make it your priority to help that woman be employed. There's no amount of Social Security benefit that makes up for lost income.
Right.
It's just not true.
And what practical advice as well as spiritual, emotional advice? There's some practicality of getting some ducks in a row, keeping your options open, choosing you at times, choosing self-care and self-love and self, you know, the path of future, no matter what it looks like, that puts you in a powerful place financially or with options that you may find yourself someday that you didn't expect.
You bet.
And I hope that through this, you know, I've equated some of your story with some of my loss as I went through my divorce, but I know that's night and day pain as well. And I'm never wanting to diminish or compare in that way. It's just that that is my filter of loss at probably one of the deepest levels that I've experienced as a human. But it's very different than losing the love of your life, and
Here's the thing though, they're cousins. Those lots of cousins. I mean, they're very tightly correlated. And the truth is, it's okay to let yourself and your kids in particular live a different kind of life. Don't hold yourself up to the standard called, we're going to do it exactly the way it's always been done. Because in fact, it cannot be. Whether you're a single mom or you share custody or you lost your spouse, it's never going to be the same. And it has to be okay.
No, it's good.
That's really good. Day one, but it has to be okay for you.
No, that's really good. So I've created this space for women to connect and for women to find their voice and for women to listen to these stories and maybe get 1 ounce of courage, 1 ounce of hope that they didn't have when they woke up this morning, and maybe one act of activation that I'm going to do something. I may choose to go do yoga. I may choose to punch a punching bag. I may choose to journal. I may choose to get into therapy. I may choose to have a conversation with a friend. And we're all going to have outlets that serve us well. And the goal is that every day and along these seasons and journeys that we're making baby steps towards healing and baby steps towards voice and baby steps towards encouraging to other women. What's a last piece of gold that you can drop in to women to give encouragement? Obviously, at your age, widowhood is a small percentage of women. Like you're very young, and there that threshold isn't there. As we age, more and more women will experience it. But what's some nuggets of wisdom that you want to leave with the women as we close this up today?
Reach out to your women friends. I mean, that's the lifesaver. It's in so many circumstances, but particularly when you experience loss, you'll be amazed. First of all, we tend to reach out more productively, we as women. So if women don't find you to say, let me help, or how are you today, then do the big favor. Most people are just afraid that it's not the right time, or how will she feel? Just do it.
I love
Get the courage to talk to somebody. A little bit.
No, that's good. So let's put that as our activation. So if you're listening today, I'm going to implore to you to reach out to a friend, girlfriend, one or two, to either have virtual coffee, happy hour, or face-to-face coffee to build that friendship. Reach out to someone that you haven't seen for a while, maybe, and let's just continue to build this powerful community of women who are advocates and supporters of each other to give hope and courage, because all of us can use a little more hope and courage in our lives. So, Mary Ann, I am so honored. I think
likewise.
We laughed, we cried. If we take some clips from this, our hands are all over. We're
I know.
Having fun. We had a lot of fun.
Just don't focus in on my nose, because my nose was running.
That's all right. I had a coughing fit too. So I am so honored to call you my friend, and that you have such a powerful story, and your story is going to resonate in so many women who are just trying to find overcoming grief and overcoming loss. And you are powerful. You are beautiful. And I am beyond honored to call you my friend. So
my God, right back at you, Jen. Thanks for the time today. What a joy.
You're very welcome. All right. Well, this wraps up our next episode of the Genesis Speaks podcast. So get out there and make a connection with one of your girlfriends today. And I look forward to hearing and connecting with you next week. All right. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Genesis Speaks podcast. If you love the show, one of the best things you can do is to share it with a friend. Tell them what you like about it, how it inspires you, and invite them to listen. Subscribe to the Genesis Movement to empower women's voices and reclaim the power over your own narrative.